Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to this episode of The Bend. My name is Debbie Boone, and I am your host today. I want to introduce you to a longtime friend and acquaintance of mine, Joe Agsney. Now, Joe is the CEO of IT Guru. And every time I talk to Joe, it kind of freaks me out because he always tells me something about cybersecurity that just scares the hell out of me. But we're going to talk a little bit about what he does today, but more about him and how he got into the cybersecurity or the cyber world. And because I looked at his profile and he started out in parks and recreation. Mm-hmm. So I know that this is the vacations that he takes shows that. But what he does for a living is all about making sure that veterinary practices have safe and secure software systems in place so that we are not attacked by, you know, hackers and ransomware and all the evil that is out there in the world. So Joe, thank you very much for joining me today on The Bend, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thanks.
So tell us, I always like to start with the origination of how you got from there to here. Tell me how you got started in your profession as an IT guru.
So yeah, I was, you know, you just mentioned I was in parks and recreation. That's what I went to college for, right? Long way back. And I primarily lived around the Illinois area where they have a bunch of park districts and such. So I ran, you know, when I started out my career, I ran daddy-daughter date nights and, all kinds of fun recreation administration stuff, you know, summer camp, moved over to the YMCA, worked for them, ran aquatics for them. I was in charge of the pools. Then I migrated into risk management, which was a great role. I loved that role. Worked for the Northbrook Park District there. And that's kind of where I got my taste of IT was, they were kind of progressive and they were, had a mainframe and, all this technology kind of running, and they were kind of, way ahead of the time. So I really got into, working and understanding the technology from that aspect and, just really fell in love with it and actually referred them out to an individual I had met that was building computers and assisting. And so he really, took me under his wings and really helped me understand all that. And then, at the end of the day, I was, becoming a father and, wasn't, the money wasn't there, right? It was a great, the meaning was there. The money wasn't coming. It would have been there if I would have stayed with it long-term, but, I decided, at the time Chicago Tribune had a newspaper that had just pages and pages of IT jobs because of Y2K.
Right. We thought the world was coming to an end and all the computers were going to crash.
Exactly. So so they had all this work, this consulting work. And so, so my wife was pregnant at the time. I had a full-time job, benefits, all this stuff. And then I told, and it was actually her mother-in-law that kind of said, why don't you look at this? She pointed out the Trib and Chicago Trib, just looking at, it was probably four pages of IT jobs at the time. So, decided we, to make the jump, but I started out as a, contractor. So I lost my benefits, dove in and took off from there. So, worked through that, worked for a company called MicroAge downtown Chicago and, really just going out on sites and consulting and just, testing and consulting. And then I got into the networks. They put me in charge of some of the, larger networks and such. So then finally stumbled upon a client of theirs called American Medical Response, and they needed help. So I was dedicated spot as a technician there. And I always had this dream of going back to Colorado because during my recreation, administration, college days, I worked at a summer camp out in Gypsum, Colorado. And I said to myself, I love this place. I love Colorado. I want to live here, but it was really hard to try to find a job to move there. So when I found a job that was, an opportunity that really with the corporate company was in Colorado, it made sense, right? It's like, oh, I'll work with you. Maybe there's an opportunity there. So they had a call center in Wisconsin and one downtown Chicago. So I commuted between the two every other day. I got to learn a lot there. They dealt with both ALS and BLS, they called it. So advanced life services versus basic life services. So they were doing transports for, say, dialysis patients, but they were also doing things like 911 dispatch,
wow.
Where people like one of the call center. I remember sitting there working on a computer and the call agent next to me was helping a woman give birth on the side of the road.
Oh, my word.
Right. So
wow.
Just
that's a call you won't forget.
No. Yeah, exactly.
Oh my gosh.
So you're sitting there, and that really helped me make the meaning of it. It's like, okay, we need this technology to work. If this doesn't work, they can't do that.
Yeah.
So it was, I really enjoyed working there. It was fun. I learned a lot, but I worked my way up from just a technician all the way up to a senior system administrator while working there. And, really started understanding uptime, understanding the value of uptime, understanding, best practices and how to put things in so they just stay stable and they secure and they run. We ran through, there was times back then, I remember, we learned a lot. There was viruses that would come through and we'd have to patch and stop and so it wouldn't take down the call center.
Yeah.
We had redundancies that we've learned how to put in. It was a fascinating place to work. But what they decided to do at that time was they had the two call centers. They shut down the Chicago one and rolled it into the Wisconsin office. The Wisconsin office then decided, we had all these dispatch centers all across the U.S. So we took what we had in Wisconsin and we virtualized it. So we were one of the pioneers of what we're doing today. We were cutting edge, bleeding edge back then, but we were streaming that application across the network back to the local 911 dispatch centers all over the US, including like Hawaii, right? So
wow.
we had centers in Hawaii, East Coast and West Coast, and we were able to, just send, the application. They all was hosted on a server, but we were able to push that application across a real thin wire to them and let the 911 dispatch center. So they decided that they were going to do this. They let everybody go and that Wisconsin office, except myself and the manager, we ran that. We just had a shell. We just had the technology there and we converted it all back up to Colorado. And that's when they offered me the opportunity to come move out there. So moved out. Oversaw that for a while, but then it was, that has a lot of stress involved. You're getting calls at 3 a.m. that you have to respond to. So it got to a point where I'm like, if I'm going to work that hard, I think I may go work for myself. And that's
kind of like being a large animal vet, all in the middle of the night, as some cow is having a calf in the stream down the road and you're getting
right.
to come out on farm calls. So you're right.
So
was it working in like the 911 and that kind of medical field that led you over into vet med?
So I think I got out just, and started doing small business consulting to start, right? Just, got involved. What got me into vet med was I was searching for a niche to kind of get involved with, right? So I dabbled a little bit here and there. I tried lawyers and I realized, it's just not my forte, right? No offense, it's just a different type of, and it gave me no meaning. Back to, I like meaning, right? And so it really just gave me no meaning. And one particular office I was working at a law firm, it was like, all they dealt with was like DUI calls every morning, every Monday. It was like, it made me realize like how expensive, you get yourself in trouble on that, how expensive it is.
Yeah, don't drink and drive because it costs a lot of money.
It may kill somebody, right, too.
Yeah.
But, it just wasn't providing meaning. So I kept searching. And it's like, we got to find a niche. So it was, I remember this day. I remember the day clearly. It was my daughter's 13th birthday. I came home for dinner and I just we had just signed a clinic on, a veterinary practice out of Parker, Colorado, Parker Center Animal Clinic. They're still a client of ours. They just signed with them, and they, I was so excited. I was so excited. I came back, and at dinner, my daughter asked me how the holiday went. I was like, it reminds me a lot of medical. There's, you see all this, there's this whole front end, but then there's this behind the scenes stuff going on that I knew nothing about at the time, but they're doing dentistry back there. They're doing x-rays, they're doing ultrasounds, and a lot of the same technology that I was used to. And that in my previous work is all integrated here. It's really cool. I didn't realize, you know, and my daughter looked at me, she goes, why don't you just focus on that? And the light bulb went off.
Oh, right? Yeah. Wow. So, out of the mouth of babes, man.
Right.
Well, you know, that I've often told people that they should make sure that they give clients tours of their hospital, because people don't know how cool it is past the front desk or that exam room. And I had clients who used to come to our practice for years and years. And we had this big open house one day, and they got a tour. They said, man, I have never been back here. This is like a real human hospital. I went, yeah, it is. We have all the stuff, right? All the stuff. And all that stuff has technology now, because it didn't used to, you know. Now it's all connected and complicated. And so we do need people like you to make sure. One of my favorite questions to ask when I go in and start a consultation is, you know, how often are you backing up your stuff? You know, we're backing up, you know, this is routine. Okay, yeah. How about your x-ray machine? How about your ultrasound machine?
Right.
They hadn't thought about that, because they just assume it's all connected together, but it's not. And and sometimes there's just holes in those things. And I know that this is kind of things that when you come into practices, you're plugging those holes for us, because we don't know. And keeping our systems up, oh man, I mean, I can tell you that, you know, back in the 90s, things weren't quite as reliable as they are today. And I came into practice one day right before the 4th of July, which, huge boarding holiday. And I had a message on my old Unix-based AVS system that said, "Kernel panic." Mm-hmm. And I went, that can't be good.
No.
And it was not. It was not. So for 4 days, we had no computer system over the 4th of July holiday. And we had to hand write all those medical chart notes and all those invoices for hundreds of pets that came in and out. And then when we finally got the system back up, we had to hand enter all that stuff again.
Right.
So I know, I want to ask you this question, and I want to get back to our, you know, our about you questions, but how different and how reliable are the systems now compared to what they were even 10 years ago? Because that's something I get when I'm talking to veterinarians who are still writing paper charts, and they're out there.
I see them. Yep.
Oh yeah. Like, well, what if my system goes down?
Mm-hmm.
That's just, it just really doesn't happen that much in my perspective. And am I right in saying that?
Well, it always can. So you have to be prepared for that, right? Mm-hmm. So there's two objectives we shoot for when we're reviewing a clinic is, you know, RPO is real-time protection. How often are you backing up?
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, RTO is recovery time objective. How quickly can you get back up and running should a failure occur?
Yes.
So those two things you have to know. You have to know. You have to ask.
Mm-hmm.
You have to ask. If you're not asking that, so, you know, and again, I think you nailed it, is I think, you know, not knowing what you don't know. Okay. At the end of the day, that's our, you know, we look at that as like, you know, people ask, what's your competitor out there? It's like, it's the clinic not knowing what they don't know. And so it's just understanding and understanding what you have. And so, you know, if you don't think of backups anymore, think of, you know, recovery objectives, right? Business continuity. Mm-hmm. So we'll often get the clinic or hospital says, hey, we're still paper. We want to go paper. They say paperless. There's no such thing.
It's not a paper light.
Paper light. Right. Everybody's light. So we just go paper light. But now you're 100% dependent on that technology. The dependency's there. Now let's think strategically. How do we make sure that we're backing up? So we like to see solutions that back up hourly today, not nightly. hourly. Just like you said, we had to re-input data for, you know, 2-3 days, right? So, so if you have hourly backups, your worst case scenario should be an hour or two of input. That shouldn't be a huge detriment to a practice, right? An hour or two. And then how quickly can we recover? We want hours, not days. Right. We want recovery options in hours, not day. And that's not cutting edge, bleeding edge type of technology. That's stuff that's been around, you know, for well over, you know, 15 years now, right?
But I think you're right. I think that's the question a lot of practices don't ask, because they're like, oh, well, we back up, or we back it up to the cloud, or we're backing up here. But how soon do you have access to that information? Because it can really take days to access that back. If there's a fire or flood or some kind of damage that happens like that. So the question is, how soon? Not right, when, you know, but how soon?
A lot of these clinics or hospitals, they depend on that. Say it's your traditional PIM, right? Your Cornerstone Avermark Infomed, you know, locally installed servers there at the clinic. A lot of times that server becomes the brains of the outfit. If it goes away, nothing works. So you got to be able to recover that quickly to stop the emergency, right? Get the emergency off the table, get back to business, and then get you time to kind of fix the true issue there. So it comes down to it though, that recovery time objective is huge.
Yeah. So Joe, getting back to like starting a business, you and I both have been there and started businesses from scratch after working for somebody else. You know, kind of what was your thought processes and what were your biggest challenges in just deciding to start your own company?
Well, yeah, it's like, I think the biggest challenge, first challenge was hiring the right people to start it, right? I think it's a very scary moment to hire. And as you continue hiring, it's getting the right team involved, right? So I think that was probably the biggest the biggest hurdle I had to go over is get the first employee, right? And then realizing, okay, but then the challenge was really removing myself from being, working as maybe a technician, right? I still love it. I still enjoy it. I still love the hands-on. I have a hard time, removing myself of that, but just relinquishing the ability for other members of the team to really take over and go. So it's a transition we made from, being a small shop, 1-2, three person organization to where we are now, which is, 12 and growing. That you just have to realize that you have to delegate. That was hard for me to really move past. That was, I think the hardest piece was the delegation aspect, delegating controls to allow others to, and I think that I learned it this way, is that they may not take the same path I would have taken, but as long as we're getting to the same results, right?
Yeah.
Process. I think that was the biggest piece that I've learned over time, that, proper process of documentation around that process, really getting individuals involved in the process building so that they are part of that, that they own it. Not just handing them process of how you expect to get done, but asking them how it should be done and how. And so it's always evolving, but making sure it's documented so that, you're not recreating that wheel as per se. Somebody else is going to come in, maybe not agree with maybe that past process, but then they get to tweak and modify it. But yeah, it's always challenging, right? But just getting the buy-in and understanding of the direction. And lately, really, for us, it's really honing in on that. Our true north, I think we call it, right? Our true north of the direction of who we are, what we become, and us having just a specific niche on veterinary practices is great, because it really provides us to really hone in on exactly what we want. Clients to focus on patient client care, right? And let us, not the computer, all that stuff should be, right. And then, that's what they need to focus on and try to make them as efficient as possible lately. Exactly. That's what we're shooting for.
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of times, I mean, there are people like you who love computers and programming and doing all this stuff, but I've always looked at them as the equivalent of a drill. I mean, if you want a hole, you get a drill. If you want to do this work, you get a computer. And I don't care how the drill is made. I just want the drill to work. And the same thing, I feel the same thing about the computer. I just want it to work and right. do what I want it to do. And I don't need to be the person who fixes it. Although God knows, I have stood on a ladder and gone into the server and with a phone in one ear, with Cornerstone on the other, changed the motherboard in my server. And I said, this is way more than I ever intended to know about the inside of this box. And I right. don't want to know it anymore. But I did learn this. Don't put your server way up high because you have to stand on a ladder to fix it. Yep. So I thought it was smart when we built this good shelf up here to keep the dog hair off of it and keep it out of everybody's path. And then I discovered that anytime you needed to do anything to it, I was on the ladder.
You see that a lot. Yeah, there's usually, so we, so there's, you know, we're going through and then we're defining, you know, as we go in and say we're onboarding a practice, like the number one thing we'll typically see is that they'll have a server in a room, but they also use it as storage.
Yes.
So then it's just loaded with, like, you know,
everything. One,
a washing machine. There's a washing machine there.
Yeah. So let's put some humidity in there. That's really good for it.
Well, it's just a spare washing machine, right? It's just, but it's there in storage. And then Christmas decorations are there. And so then when it comes time to troubleshoot, right? So what we aim for is one, we want to have as minimal problems as possible, right? But when issues come up, we need to fix them as quickly as possible. Again, getting back to, you know, efficiency, getting back to technology running so that they can get back and do what they need to do. But if we have a technician that shows up and they have to clear a room first.
To make a path through the Christmas tree to try to
get to it. Right. I mean, so that could be, you know, a half hour to an hour just clearing the room.
Oh, man.
You know?
Oh, my God.
I think
God.
We had one instance, there was a cat litter box right behind the server. So they put it there because it was convenient. I think cat liked it because it was warm, probably.
Warm.
But
yeah.
We got an offline notification. And then sure enough, we went on site. The cat had hit the power cord and unplugged the server. So, like, well, I think we need to move that litter box.
I think we need to move the litter box. Oh, right. My gosh.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure you see some hilarious things. In new structures, I think they realize that they're just going to build a closet and they're going to put everything in there. And the architect's designed for that. But in these older buildings, the infrastructure is never designed to have the wiring or the place that's even safe for these pieces of equipment. And, you know, you just have to be creative about how to get them in there. And then I think sometimes the team doesn't realize. I went into a hospital one time and they had the server underneath the reception desk, but it was in a closed cabinet. And when I opened it up, the heat boiled out. And I went, geez Louise, guys, servers don't like this hot. You know, they like it cooled down. You've got to do something about this. So we ended up cutting holes in the door and putting like venting in there. But they kept having problems. Well, I don't know anything, but I know this. Heat's not good. You know, so we need to fix that. But
right.
it's interesting to go into these hospitals and see some of the creative things that are done.
Here's another one that's creative. Well, I went out to do an assessment, East Coast. I could see the server. I couldn't find it. Kept looking and looking. I couldn't find the server. I'm like, where is this thing? Right. I know there's a server here. I need to get a picture of it. I need to know where it's at. It's not in the core, where we call the core area.
Uh-huh.
That's typically where we like it because you can power protect it. Everything's protected, that core, the networking, internet, server, everything's kind of protected in one spot. Went around, did the same thing. Started opening cabinets, looking at cabinets. And then sure enough, it's like I went back and I was taking a break. I remember taking a break. I was in their break room. And sure enough, I look up on top of the cabinet. There's a server sitting up there and there's a cable coming down. It's plugged into an outlet that's shared with the microwave oven. So, and I'm like, oh, that's not good.
That's not good.
I mean, the server had two power supplies, you know, the back of it, but only using one cable.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, you know, so, you know, and maybe it was a temporary solution and they just had to get it in and get it done. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, yeah. So I've seen that, you know, and yeah, but we're really moving more and more like server infrastructure and such. We like to see that kind of get out of the clinic. Mm-hmm. We were really wanting servers. I mean, I get it, you know, Impermed, Avamark, or especially Avamark, we typically see that we still need local servers, but Impermed, Cornerstone, we're trying to shift that up. Now let's get servers out of the practice. Oh, they're not being maintained. They're not being monitored. Let's remove this and let's just put it out here instead of down here. Yes, so
absolutely. I do see most of my clinics moving to the cloud. Mm-hmm. And the questions that I get about, you know, what software, I'm sure you get that 10 times more than I do.
All the time.
I laugh because at some point in time, everybody hates something about their software. So there's no perfect software out there yet that we have seen.
Right.
But it just sort of depends on your workflow and what you're comfortable with and how, how easy, for me, ease of training new people, right. I think is a really important thing because once you've got them trained, then you can kind of figure the tweaks and the workarounds. And mm-hmm. I had Cornerstone for many, many years, and man, I could make it do anything. I love Cornerstone, and depth of reporting and stuff is great. But, would I recommend anything that wasn't cloud-based right now, as long as people had the bandwidth to handle it and a really stable internet structure? Nah, but it's definitely, I'd say have the cloud and have access to it from, an app on your phone and all kinds of cool stuff that you can now do.
We're more than just an IT company. We are your strategic partner that will proactively keep you protected. We have extensive knowledge in IT, but equally important, we work exclusively in the veterinary industry. So we know what we're doing when it comes to practice management systems and veterinary specific equipment. And we talk in a way that you can understand, not geek speak. To see if we're a good fit for your practice, schedule an assessment where we'll thoroughly inspect your existing setup, identify areas of concern, and put all our findings into a comprehensive report. This information can be taken and implemented yourself, or you can hire us to address areas of concern. We'll not only protect your system from failure and attack, but also ensure that an IT strategy is in place to keep downtime to a minimum if something were to happen. Protecting your practice is easy. Just book an assessment with IT Guru today.
So Joe, let me ask you, you talked about hiring that first person, and I can relate to that because, you know, basically I'm a shop of one, but I mean, my husband does a lot of work for me as far as like keeping the books and that kind of stuff. And then I had to outsource some social media stuff, which was kind of like a personal conversation that I often have with my audience. And I'm like, oh, I don't know if I can somebody actually be my voice? So it is hard to give up and hire that first person. But I love the fact that you said, you know, when you're building your structure and your protocols, that you're having your people involved in that. And I think a lot of times business owners and managers, they have these ideas in their head and they want to control everything. And then they can't possibly do it all. So you've got to be able to give up some stuff. And then your people also want to take it. That's the other thing. That's the other part of the equation. And did you find that once you kind of learned that lesson, like I have to give up control because I can't handle it all myself. You know, it's bigger than me now. It's bigger mm-hmm. than me. Did you find that your business kind of took off when you took that approach?
Yeah, absolutely. You have to, you know, it's, you know, I think it kind of goes back to the E-myth. You know, I really believe in that model, right? Where I could be the technician, or I could be the one working the whole thing. But in order to really do this, you know, you got to get people in that you trust and they move forward and assist you. It's not an easy thing. It's a easy concept, difficult to implement, right? Mm-hmm. Easy, a very easy concept, but very difficult to kind of take on. So, you know, back when I was going through that, I had some, you know, help from some individuals in Colorado. There's an individual I worked with. His name is Chuck Blakeman. He's just a brilliant guy. Just, you know, he talked about, you know, just his whole philosophy model is, you know, industrial revolution age, right, is kind of where we grew businesses from, where we just put people in as cogs and wheels almost, you know, of you just make this part, right? This is your job. And now machines have taken over that type of thing. But you know, they're, you can look at that approach of just, telling, individuals that, this is exactly what you're going to do. Or you can take a different approach where that is, get them involved and in the decision process, make them stakeholders in the business, right? Let them make the decisions and run with it, right? Mm-hmm. So, the business is always, going down a road of, evolution where, it's not a straight line of where you go from growth from here to here. It's been like this, right? It's just this, it's not a, but as long as it's going, in the direction we need to go, we're in good shape. But it's just, you may take two steps forward, have to take one step back and relook at things. We're going to make mistakes along the way. And I always just recommend it, it's like, I always just say, it's like, as long as we're not making the same mistakes all over and over, and then we're okay. We learn from those mistakes, we move on, but you have to really empower people to be able to do what they need to do so that they can, take it. But you really do need a good, vision, mission, values that you're marching towards, so that everybody's along that. And you're always guiding those folks on those values as you're, and so if you're finding folks that are really aligning to those values, then they're probably not going to be, somebody that's going to be within the organization very long. So you just got to recognize that, right? Values are intrinsic. They, it's who you are as an organization. And so we stick to those values heavily. And, ours are, around honesty and integrity and perseverance, right? Always seeing things through. And it's just, for us, it's just, we're in the business of client services, but we provide IT services on top of that, right? But it's all about the client service experience, and that's who we really shoot for. And so the technical experience has to be there, but the values of how they align with us as an organization are key. So
the other thing that you said that I appreciate is that we found a niche. We focus on this one thing. And I think when I started as a consultant, if you're managing practices, you're used to doing everything and you can do a lot of stuff. And so when I first started, I was kind of marketing myself too broadly. But then I found that what I really love to do is the communication part. I really love to teach teams and build that culture and talk about the things that you're talking about, which are really truly leadership things. And so I narrowed the focus of my marketing and the work that I do and the things that I write down to the stuff that I really love and feel like I'm passionate about, because I can do the math, but I don't love the math, right? So I think, and there are people out there who do, and that's great. So I just turf those things off to people who do that kind of stuff. And I think that's really important. So Joe, what do you consider to be your biggest career mistake? You talked about the trajectory of a business and the up and downs. And, every one of those mistakes is an opportunity to learn to not do that again. But what do you think is your biggest one?
Biggest mistakes? I think not getting myself out earlier, than I should have. I think that was a mistake. I think I held on to it for a little bit too long. Not really knowing the trigger points of hiring triggers, right? Really the understanding the fundamental numbers that go behind hiring decisions and when to kind of pull that trigger. I think I've, in the past, sometimes I wait too long and then it's a little bit too late. So that we're always trying to be a one plus shop now. It's a one plus, meaning we're probably one more than we should be, but that's okay. That we have some, agile, we have a little bit, we're a little agile in that realm, that we, we lose one, we're okay still. And we, we can, but yeah, just understanding that, where, from a financial aspect, just really making sure you're honing in on those numbers from, so I've really learned that over the last, few years, right. Of just, just really understanding those trigger points of when, when we can really bring on that next person, then, and then really prepping for that next person before you're really ready for it.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah. That's hard.
You know, I think that's one thing that I used to do when I was managing is I would always have what almost was a spare person. And my boss would come and go, what are all these people doing here? You know, they're just hanging on coat hangers on the wall. I went, no, they're not. Because there's always something to do, for one thing. Right. But if somebody was out sick, if somebody did need to be off, I had flexibility. I did not have to make people feel guilty for taking a day off work or for being sick, because we still had coverage. We still had enough people always to do the work.
Right.
I think this is really where a lot of businesses, and honestly, if you look at human healthcare during COVID and things that happened, that just enough people, those extreme efficiencies are not efficiencies.
Right.
When it all plays out, they just burn your people out, and they look good on paper. Your numbers look good, but they really are killing your staff. And, and you don't serve anybody well, because you're just putting out fires with the people that you have. There's lots of overtime. So it doesn't make sense. So I'm like you, I'm like the one plus.
Yeah. And just, you know, always having that growth mindset, right? Of just, you know, I think the other mistake, which would be around the marketing aspect, we weren't, you know, and so there's, you know, investment in marketing is important to consistently have for us, for, you know, consistently have, you know, conversations and, you know, and again, we're all about the education aspect. So at the end of the day, we want to educate the community what's going on, but at the same time, we're hoping for some business, you know. Yeah, sure. And so, you know, we've got to have buying discussions, and you know, that pipeline needs to be there of conversations. And no, are we going to get every single client? You know, everybody we talk, absolutely not. But if we've educated them, at least they're more educated to go make a decision, you know, whether it's with us or not, right?
Yeah.
So, oh, yeah. But yeah, I think that's the other piece, is that sales and marketing is key in any organization. And if you're not investing in that, then, you know, you're not going to have a predictable pipeline of mm-hmm. opportunities if that's making sense. So.
Yeah. And marketing to the ideal client, because you said we don't get them all, but then again, maybe they're not your ideal client. That's the other thing too, is you got to find somebody who wants what you are selling.
Right.
Who understands the value of what you do, because otherwise, you know, you're fighting a battle all the time. I mean, I had somebody ask me one day, you know, why are consultants so expensive? Because she had had me, and she had somebody else in there prior to me. And I said, it is not the hour that I spend with you. It is the 30 years it took me to get here to know what to tell you in the hour. I got it.
It's experience.
It is. Yeah. And sometimes it's just the situations that you get into and work your way out of, and now you know a solution. And randomly 20 years from now, it might come along again, but the solution is already there. You've done it, you know, and maybe you refine it, but it's still there out there in the world. So Joe, talking about, you know, growing your business and marketing, tell me, how do you feel networking played a part in the success of your business?
It's key. I mean, yeah, you've got to be able to, you know, especially within the niche, right? I mean, there's veterinary industry is a small niche community, right? Mm-hmm. We all know each other, right? So it's just really, you know, getting involved and understanding. And I look at it as, you know, it's an opportunity to learn what other folks are doing, right? And what's working and what's not working. Mm-hmm. So the same way we network within our own industry, right? The known IT industry, right? There's things that work, there's things that don't work. And so we have to stay, you know, in tune of what's happening there, you know, from you know, trends and perspectives and what the next thing is that we have to evolve into. But within, you know, within the veterinary community, it's just, it's being involved in, you know, in the industry in many different facets of, you know, being, you know, whether you're going to, you know, for us, trade shows and, you know, events like ourselves at Vet Partners, you know, just to continue to understand what's the real trends and what's happening within this industry, right?
Yeah.
The struggles and, you know, the struggles are real right now, right? Wow. I mean, it's absolutely real. Right. It's hard to find people, you know, mm-hmm. it's hard to hire. It's hard to, so just understanding that and assisting, and it gives us the ability now to be able to assist the clinics and practices with those issues, you know, where we know and understand that you know what's happening. So it gives us that insight, but also there's a benefit there that we get to know the client much better, and then we can refer the client, you know, then we see, we see you have this problem. Let me get you in touch with these folks so that you can, you know, maybe go do, this piece of you're talking to. So it's not like we're just helping them with their, you know, the computers and networks, right? We're helping them as a business all together and assisting them with, you know, other things that they're potentially facing that we have at our fingertips to be able to assist them with. And that's what it's all about, in my opinion, is, it's about the relationship, and it's about referring others in the industry that, you know, have experience that can help them through a potential, you know, pain point that they're currently hiring. I'm like, give me an example, like Stacy with the Vet Recruiter, right? Anytime, like, we're at a booth and we're talking to students, we're like, go talk to Stacy and Daryl over at the Vet Recruiters.
Exactly.
They could probably place you, you know, and, you
like
know,
if tomorrow.
Right. Their third year, you've got a job.
You do. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm interviewing somebody this afternoon who's not even out of school yet, but we're going to interview her because, you know, she wants to live where my client lives. And you got to be creative. That's the thing. And, you know, the other thing I've been talking to clinics about, Joe, and I'm sure you can back me up on this, is if you don't have the manpower, the bodies, technology can take a lot of the mundane off of the humans.
Yeah.
And so if we are using things like Talkative for dictation, or we're using apps that we can text message back and forth to our clients, it's huge time savings, little bites at a time. But over the day, that little incremental bit of time that it saved us not having to make a phone call or being able to give a client results that are positive through a text message or an email saves so many manpower hours in a week. Yep. So I think that's where we're going to have to start looking at.
These phones are ringing off the hook.
Oh man, they are.
You know, they are. They're just, I'm in one of these practices and all day long it's just ring, 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 you know, and it's just, you know, we're coming up with effective solutions. So, we need to build solutions that still drive the compassion aspect to it. Right. So that, you know, and the communication is key, and it doesn't have to be that phone call, right? Yeah. It doesn't, and you know, the clients, especially the younger ones, and we know this, that, I mean, my kids just, they interact with text, right? That's how we have a family text chain, and that's how we're communicating and knowing kind of what's going on and et cetera. And that could be the same. And that's a quick, you know, snippet out, and there's solutions around that. Right. And so, yeah, we have to be creative around the efficiencies, you know, how can we make these practices more efficient and effective. But let's not lose that client experience. Right. Let's there's automated ones, and it's just, okay, reminder, and that's great. A reminder is a reminder and whatnot. But you know, when the pet's being seen, and it's like, hey, you know, our cat Poppy, and hey, Poppy's doing great. She's coming out of anesthesia from her, you know, I have a toothless cat now, but she's, you know, she's coming out of anesthesia, you know, just that consistent client communication was key for me. It just gave me peace of mind knowing that, you know, so then the client doesn't have to pick up the phone saying, how's Poppy doing? Right. That's exactly. Just one less phone call. But, you know, the whole online appointment, like, setting, right. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at it. We live in the world of, you know, booking our own airfare. We don't use.
I haven't booked an airline. I mean, I can't imagine using a travel agent for anything.
I mean, I could.
You and I are pros at this stuff,
right? So,
but
I just mean, do it ourselves.
Yeah, and apps for hotel, apps for Uber, Lyft.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, everything is an app, and that's fine with me, because unless I have a problem, but if I have a problem, I want a human to walk me through the problem. And I think our clients are the same way. If there's something, you know, routine, I need a, you know, my puppy needs vaccine number 3. Why can't I just do that myself? And there are certainly tools out there like Vetstoria that will do that. You know, they kind of work on the back end, and you can set them up so the clients can make their own appointment. I wouldn't have them do that for something complicated, but there's an algorithm even in that software that says, okay, this is, you know, you need urgent. This is, you can't make your own appointment for this. You have to call. So those kind of things set up. But for years, as I was teaching my Patterson class, I used to tell my students, I said, why in the world don't you video your doctors giving medication instructions in the room for the client and then send the link to the client? Because then everybody in their family can watch it. Because I guarantee you that some of those redundant phone calls are that one family member went home, tried to explain it to the other family member who's actually going to have to do it, and they don't understand it. So they call the clinic and go, I don't understand what the doctor said. And so then you're doing this work over and over again when a quick tech solution would solve the problem. Now, I never said let the client video you, because if something goes south, you really don't want it on YouTube. But we want control of the video, but there's no reason not to do it. And it's also use it for training. If you're trying to show somebody in your hospital how you want, or your doctor likes their surgical pack set up, why wouldn't you video that and give it to somebody new and say, just watch this as many times as you want to. And then my skilled technician can be overdoing patient care instead of repeating herself 4 times for somebody who's just learning. So it's just getting out of that, we've always done it this way mindset, and thinking about how we can use these tools that are available to us to make, you know, our lives better, us more efficient, the client get a better experience. Like you said, just a text that said, hey, Poppy's doing great.
Right. I mean, I think there's some of the challenge there has been some of these clinics or hospitals are not set up properly for that. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think there's one that reached out to us in California, like, we're ready to move into the 21st century, you know, and they're emailing me from an AOL address. Right. I'm like, oh, you know, so kind of, nowadays, if you're interacting with clients with an AOL address, that's, yeah, you could do it. I'm not going to say it's going to work, right? But what type of impression does that give, you know, the client, right? So I think we have to let's get into formal business. Let's have a professional domain name. Let's have our organization sent from that. You know, so that's all set up. There's a base that needs to be in, and in many cases it's not. We see Gmail, we see Yahoo, we see AOL, we see it all, right? But we want to really wrap this communication around a professional image. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, it comes across, just as I said, professional, right?
Yeah. It's a brand, and people don't understand.
Right.
Their brand is everything that they correspond with, and that email address matters. And I'm working with a clinic that is a startup. They're actually just kind of doing a build out right now in Hawaii. And instead of having that info at blah, 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 everything about them is about connecting with the client. And I said, why don't you just have connect at Helena Vet? And they went, oh, that's the perfect word. And I went, you know, we don't always have to do info at, right?
Right.
We can make it what we want it to be and brand it to us.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the branding piece is important there, you know? And so that communication is key. I agree with you 100%. There's a lot of, you know, efficiencies, but there's some of these practices have to kind of step up to the next step, you know? It's, you know, and yeah, utilization of technology can really help, right? It can be an enabler for sure.
Oh yeah.
It can be an enabler for sure. But I think it goes back to, just like you said, we have to be looking at efficiencies within practices today. It's just, we know it. I mean, it's hard. I think I had a meeting scheduled this week with the practice manager, and she couldn't make the meeting. She's like, I got stuck at the front desk. I get it. I understand. Mm-hmm. You don't have to explain. That's you know, that's not a problem. And so we'll reschedule and we'll have the meeting, but I completely understand. So,
yeah. Yeah. And it is difficult to make these changes, but especially if you're shorthanded. Right. And then you're trying to get home at some reasonable hour of the night, and I completely get it. But I think you do have to look long term here and think, okay, I'm going to bite the bullet for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, and I'm going to work after closing, and I'm going to get this stuff done, because then it's going to make my life so much easier for the rest of the year.
Right.
Just to power through it. And that's kind of the way I always looked at it. You know, I spent several nights after hours doing stuff like this, but then in the long run, my job got easier and easier as it went. So sometimes you just have to say, okay, that work-life balance thing, I think it's work-life integration. Sometimes you're going to pay all your attention over here, and this is going to be at the bottom of the seesaw. And sometimes, you know, seesaw goes the other way.
Right.
I think we have to be realistic like that. There is no level. It's a fairy tale. It's a complete fairy tale, especially if you're owning your own business. That is the truth. Okay. So Joe, let me ask you, what advice would you give somebody who is facing a big life decision? Like you decided to, you know, start your own business. That's a huge life decision. You decided to move, you know, to Colorado, another big life decision. Do you have kind of a mental formula that you go through to make these big decisions?
I just have a philosophy, and that's, you know, it's not a, don't just dip your toe in the water, right? Dive straight in. You know, I'm kind of a guy that just jumps in the pool to get in the pool, right? Don't ease into it, just jump in. So I think you have to be all in. Mm-hmm. I think you have to be all in on that. And so when we decided, you know, and, you know, fear is a thing, right? Mm-hmm. You know, fear of failing, fear of, you know, and so don't be afraid to fail. You know, failing is good. Failing, you know, is learning, right? Is mm-hmm. a way to learn to, you know, and so getting out there and just diving in and going after it, right? You're going to fail along the way. Just learn from those failures and, you know, try not to fail again. Right. But there's people that have opened businesses and failed, and then, you know, open a second business and failed. And then finally they get to the third business and they're like, wow, I've learned through those two hard knocks to really figure this out. So, don't be afraid. It is scary.
Mm-hmm.
But don't let that apprehend you to just get out there. So I remember that, you know, that first week, you know, it will motivate. It will motivate you. It will, you know, and, you know, for me, it's just, you know, find something that gets you up in the morning too, right? Mm-hmm. Every morning, right? Get you up. You're excited about it. You're moving forward with it. So if it's not something you're enjoying, then, you know, probably shouldn't be doing it. But I think the fear was the biggest piece you have to get over. Yeah. And just march forward and figure it out along the way. And the other thing is don't overanalyze it. Don't overanalyze it. So I think a good way to look at this is if you're a boat in harbor and say it's a sandy, you know, wavy beach. And so you may analyze all the different points you have to turn and make and get out there. And sit, you know, just sit on the, you know, in the dock and try to figure it all out before heading out. Or you just go out, take measurements as you go. And if you need to make a change, you make a change then. So you have to be adaptive and change and understand that there are times that, you know, yeah, you got to circle back sometimes. Maybe you went down this way and it's not going to do it, but go this way. But it's often the better route to take versus, you know, another way to put it is, you know, is paralysis by overanalysis.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Just overanalyzing things too much.
And it's never going to be perfect. You know, that's the other
thing. Never going to be perfect.
Never going to be perfect. And that's okay.
Right.
Sometimes it's good enough. And then it'll get you to the next point, you know, and then
it may look back, say, okay, we got to tweak and modify that. So we don't, you know, and then now let's continue moving forward.
And let's keep moving forward. Let's keep putting one foot in front of the other. So Joe, tell us about a fun fact about you. You got a secret talent, a favorite song, something people would be surprised to know.
Surprised to know about Joe. I like VWs. I'm a VW fan.
Aren't you really? Like a little bug?
Yeah, I have a 67 Beetle and a 1971 van. So,
oh my gosh.
So I love air-cooled cars. I like classic cars in general. I love them. I love going to car shows. I love that's kind of just a hobby I have. And so, yeah, we have Ruby Red. She's our red 67 Beetle. And then the van is being refurbished right now. And so it's been a long process. It's been years, but she's all painted, the engine's in, transmission's in. So about ready to get the interior done. Yeah. So that's one of my hobbies, I guess, I love the old VW air cooled vehicles.
Well, if you like classic cars, my college roommate's dad was the mechanic for the state, and he found and bought a 64 and a half Mustang convertible.
Ooh, I like those.
And she still has it. She still has it. And we took that car and we put a 12-foot palm tree in it that we bought at a mall. And brought that palm tree to our apartment
in that convertible
Mustang.
That's hilarious.
The palm tree lived. I'm surprisingly, it was pretty slow going, but the palm tree lived. And we had the parakeet. The parakeet loved sitting in the palm tree. So we had like a little jungle going in our apartment in college. So Joe, this has been great. I really appreciate your time today. Any final words of wisdom, any favorite book? And you mentioned E-Myth, and that's certainly...
I'm a big E-Myth fan, yeah. So, I really feel that really kind of got me in the direction that we needed to go from a business owner mindset, mm-hmm. right? From that perspective, right? Of just really understanding, what it really takes to really turn yourself from a technician into a business owner, mm-hmm. that... I always like to go back and just skim it, reread it. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great one if you haven't read it. I have it's on the shelf, so I consistently go back and pull it off the shelf and I always get little bits and pieces out of that. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, there's absolutely value in rereading books. There's some of my favorites that I've read multiple times. And if you could see my bookshelf, which is behind me, E-Myth is sitting back there too. And Peter Weinstein's version of the E-Myth Veterinarian is available. Right. So that one's a really good one for veterinary hospitals.
Absolutely.
Too. Yeah. Well, Joe, thank you so much. We will have all your IT Guru information available in the show notes so that people can reach out to you and to your company.
Thank you.
And I certainly highly recommend that they do so if they have any questions about, how their systems are set up, if they want to feel safe and secure that they're not going to be left hanging out there to dry without their PIMS to work and all the other stuff that goes along too. So thank you again for coming on the show today. And
thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it. We'll see you soon too. I think we're going to see each other very soon.
We're going to head out to the Vet Partners meeting pretty soon. And actually I'll be at AVMA next.
Good.
There's always a conference to go to.
I know. We always bump each other. So
we do. All right. Thanks again, Joe.
Yeah. Talk thank you.
Wow. Bye-bye.